Hi, welcome to James Miller Lifeology, where you'll learn to simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. My name is James Miller. I'm a licensed psychotherapist and a composer. Thank you so much for joining me today in this podcast. Let's get started. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get your free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. I have a great show for you today. I'll be teaching you ways to discover self-resilience. I'll also be interviewing Mildred D. Muhammad. She has one of the most inspirational stories I've ever heard. You all know me as a psychotherapist, but many of you do not know me as a composer. My first album, Consolation, was written specifically for people who are experiencing grief and loss. I like to think of this album like a book. Each original composition is written like a chapter in a book. And just like in any story, it goes from the loss that one experiences and eventually helps people find the hope for their future. You may purchase this album on iTunes or through any other digital music store. Be sure to download the digital booklet that comes along with it. The name of the album is Consolation, and my stage name is James S. Miller. The name of the piece you are currently hearing is entitled Temptation. An old Cherokee was teaching his grandchildren about life. He said, "A battle is raging inside of me. It is a terrible fight between two wolves. One wolf represents fear, anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. The other stands for joy, peace, love, hope, sharing, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, friendship, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith." The old man looked at the children with a firm stare. "This same fight is going on inside of you, and inside every other person, too." They thought about it for a minute, and then one child asked his grandfather, "Which wolf will win?" The old Cherokee replied, "The one you feed." Resilience. The Webster's Dictionary defines resilience as the ability to become strong, healthy, or successful again after something bad happens, or the ability of something to return to its original shape after it has been pulled, stretched, pressed, bent, etc. I'm not sure if you've noticed, but in the past episodes, we've discussed many things about how to overcome adversity, what to do when the perfect storm strikes, radical acceptance, self-validation, having a restoration mentality. All of those things are incredibly important for anyone to start over. But one of the other key components is understanding your level of resilience. Just like the Webster's Dictionary discusses, we all have a choice. We all have this resilience within us, but sometimes we just don't realize it. Sometimes we get so overwhelmed and consumed with what's happening around us that we lose sight of the strength that we have within us. One of the things I typically ask my clients, if they're going through something very difficult or they feel like there's no hope, is what is it right now that is causing you to move forward? What is it right now that is allowing you to have your next breath? And often it's very illuminating for people because some people may have the thought, "So I just can't go on," or "I don't want to live anymore." But when you really break it down to, well, there's something that's keeping you alive, something in your life right now is giving you hope, is giving you the ability to just hang on for a second longer, a minute longer, a day longer. And it's necessary for each of us when we're going through something so painful and traumatic is to find what that is, to find that small thing that is causing us just to hold on. We all have it, but you have to be aware of what it is. And once you can identify what it is, it then helps you focus on that. It helps you give your attention. It helps give your focus to that specific thing because then it becomes bigger and bigger. And pretty soon you find your purpose again. Some of the things I ask my clients to really be aware of is to separate between what is truth and fact. Previously, we've talked about radical acceptance. And once again, radical acceptance doesn't mean you accept what people have done to you, but you accept the facts as they are. So it's important for you to separate between what is fact and what is your perception. What is fact and what is it that people say about us? So in that moment, when you're struggling with whatever it is, when you can separate what you know to be true versus what people say, it gives you the strength to say, regardless of what people say about me or about this situation, that's not a fact. And so I'm going to internalize what the facts are and using whatever it is that's allowing you to take your next breath that gives you the foundation to say, I'm only going to focus on what I believe about myself. If what you believe about yourself is what other people have said that is unhealthy for you, that is not true, or that causes you to second guess yourself, that's not a fact. That's simply people's opinions. It's necessary for you to create this buffer or this shell around yourself, because when you can separate between what you believe to be true versus what people's opinions are, then you will be able to overcome any obstacle. So the buffer or the filter that we use is this fact or is this truth? Do I believe this because someone said this about me? Or do I believe this because it's true? When you can create the difference in that, we remove people's opinions and their self-doubt and their defeatist attitude from our life. And that helps us find the strength of whatever is within us in that moment. We have a choice to believe whatever we want. But if we believe something because it's an opinion and it's not fact, then that is not going to serve you in the long run. Now, we have to take into consideration when people are giving us an encouraging word or are our cheerleaders. Those are so important to have those people in your lives, because the more we focus on the positive or focus on the ability to overcome something, the greater our strength is to overcome it. Another thing to really look at is, who are you ideally? If the situation were to be stripped away and you lived in a perfect world, which of course we don't, but if you created this perfect world, who would you be ideally? What would that person look like? What would the attributes be of that person? You may be surprised, because you probably are closer to that ideal person than what you think. And of course, when the situation looks so overwhelming and so dire, this ideal person is so far removed from who we think we are. But you are going to get through this situation. What you're currently experiencing is not what you're going to experience forever. And so if we can keep this ideal person in the forefront of our mind, that gives us an end result of who we want to be. And of course, life is a journey, and every day we reconcile what we're able to do and how we're able to move forward. But when you have an idea, that creates the goal of the person in the direction you want to go in your life, and that's going to help you start to navigate through this situation. Another important fact to remind yourself of is, when did you experience confidence before? When did you experience the ability to feel joy, to feel life again, to live life again? And often we have to revert back to perhaps that experience, or use that to remind ourselves that I felt this way at one time. I can feel this way again. My circumstances today are so dire and so overwhelming, but it helps us find that resilience, because if we've experienced it before, we most likely will experience it again. I moved down here to West Palm Beach from the Washington, D.C. area, and we had a hurricane warning. And it was really interesting to me when I was down here and I experienced that and saw all the wind blowing and the storm that ensued from this hurricane, but to watch the palm trees. I once read how it says, we will flourish like a palm tree. And I remember reading, what does that mean? But now it makes sense to me. Flourishing like a palm tree essentially means, when you're going through this hurricane, when you're going through this storm, the storms of life are going to happen. The way some palm trees actually grow, they grow from the wind that bends them over. So when the palm tree is bent over, it actually is stretching the roots and stretching the trunk, and that stretching is causing it to become stronger. Just like the muscles that we have in our body, in order for your muscles to grow stronger, they have to have these slight tears. And when they have the slight tears, then they regrow stronger. The fibers are stronger. Just like this palm tree, it grows stronger through the storm. Now, in some situations, we may think, oh, I want to be like a pine tree. I want to be tall and majestic and be strong like the oak tree. But the truth is, the pine tree and the oak tree could not flourish during this hurricane. What is inside of you is specific for what you need today. When we look around at how other people have maybe overcome certain situations, or we just focus on our inability to do something, we lose all sense of power. We don't realize the true resilience that's within us. You have the ability to overcome this. You have the ability to move beyond your current situation. So I would really challenge you that when you're struggling with something right now, you have to separate between what is truth within you versus what are opinions from other people that are external. And if you focus on what's external instead of what's internal, you will never be able to find the true resilience that's within you. flourish like that palm tree. Be that person that's going to overcome the situation that you are currently in. You have the resilience, you have the fortitude, you have the strength. There is more strength and potential in you than what you realize. And now a quick word from my sponsor. For you, my listener, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. Many of you don't know this about me, but I'm an avid reader. So this is a great opportunity for me to be able to download any book I'd like to read, specifically if I'm walking my dog at the gym or even driving. So for you to get your free audiobook, go to www.audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. They have over 185,000 books for you to choose from. So I'm pretty confident you'll find the book you're looking for. So check it out today. I have a great show for you today. I have the privilege of introducing Mildred D. Muhammad. She is an award-winning, globally recognized keynote speaker, an international expert speaker for the U.S. Department of State, a certified consultant with Office on Victims of Crime, a CNN contributor, a domestic abuse survivor, a certified advocate, a trainer and educator, and author of Scared Silent, When the One You Love Becomes the One You Fear. Welcome to my show, Mildred.
Well, thank you for having me, James. I appreciate this opportunity.
Yes, most definitely. Now, you have such a powerful testimony of healing in your life.
Well, yes, my former husband was John Ali Muhammad, but others recognize him as the DC sniper. What most people don't know is that I was the intended target. Law enforcement did not put that information out there. The theory was that he was killing innocent people to cover up my murder so that he could come in as the grieving father and get custody of our children. It all began as a domestic abuse situation. I asked John for a divorce. He did not want one. He finally moved out. However, he still had a key to the house. He would come in the middle of the night, stand over me, and he would listen to me breathe, stand up, and then leave out again. Most people understand that domestic violence is a physical assault, but most don't understand that the 1 to 8 seconds is verbal, emotional, and psychological abuse. And those abuses, law enforcement are not able to enforce. So John was a soldier in the military. He was a combat engineer. He was an expert shot. He came back from Saudi, Desert Storm, and he was not the same person that he was when he left. Many soldiers suffer with PTSD when they return from a war zone. It does not mean that they all commit criminal acts. So I just want to get that out there because PTSD is a serious issue. Military soldiers do suffer with that, but victims of domestic violence also can be diagnosed with PTSD, as I was.
Yes, definitely.
I would encourage you to understand that it is a diagnosis that can be overcome with proper counseling and with proper support system. You can get through it just like I did.
Yes, that's true. And as a psychotherapist, I've worked with many people who have PTSD and the struggles that they have once they are re-traumatized and how their world completely changes and all that happens in that moment when they relive the trauma is such a powerful struggle for them at that time.
It is. And the way that I was able to get through that was with counseling. However, I was not able to find ethical counselors. This was a high-profile case. Many people wanted to be on TV or write books or whatever media they were trying to be famous. So I went to the library. I got a book on counseling, and I learned how to counsel me and my children myself. And in that, I learned how to journal. I needed to find an outlet for my emotions. I needed to identify them and then look them up in the dictionary because guilt and shame and all of the negative emotions have a different meaning before and after trauma. So once you can go through the dictionary and identify exactly which definition matches the emotion you have, then you are able to overcome it. And that's what I had to do for myself as well as my children, because most people look at John as a monster, but my children look at him as their dad. So I needed for them to understand it's okay to love him. It's okay to pray for him. It's okay to feel all of those emotions that children feel for their dads, and they not feel guilty because of it. Because of the crime he committed does not mean you stop loving your dad. So they needed permission to keep those emotions in order to move forward from them.
Mildred, how did you find the perspective to be able to come up with that, recognizing that your children, when they think of their father, that it's their father? How are you able to do that at such a traumatic time in your life? And even today, how are you able to do that?
Because my focus, my love, my aspiration is for my children. I didn't have children to hurt them. I had children to love them. And I wasn't going to allow anybody, not even myself, to emotionally damage them where they couldn't live to have a productive, emotionally balanced life. That was my objective. And so in watching them, watching me, then I needed to make sure I was well, because they were feeding off of me in order to know how they should feel.
Sure.
So you were the role model. So if I'm crying in a corner and uncontrollably, then they're lost because they don't know what to do. They only have me. So what I would do when I needed to express my emotions or cry or anything, I just told them, you know, I'm going to the store. And I went to the park. Rolled up the windows, turned the radio up loud, and screamed till my head hurt. I screamed, I cried, I got it out. There's a song back in the day that used to be shout it out. You're going to feel a little better when you shout it out. And that's what I did. I shouted, I screamed, and the first time I went, it was 45 minutes. The second time I went, it was 20 minutes. So every time I went, it became less and less until I got it all out. So now when my children saw me laughing, I was really laughing. When they saw me smiling, I was really smiling, you know, because I'm so good that I'm actually giving you a real smile. I'm not just faking a smile so you can laugh, you know?
Yes.
So it was like that. And so now if you see my children, you wouldn't even know they went through anything, because I told them, we are going to get through this with the truth.
Yes.
Whatever questions you ask me, the good, the bad, and the indifferent, you will get that from me about your dad. But I will tell you the truth, even if it makes me look bad. I did not then, nor do I now, speak badly to my children about their dad, because I believe that with everything that I taught them along the way, they are able to come up with their own perspective of how they need to view their dad. That's their decision. It's not mine.
Yes. You're such an amazing woman, and I'm just overwhelmed with hearing the resilience that you have with being able to navigate through this situation, whether you realize it or not, in such a wise, such a mature, such a developed way that many people would be so overwhelmed and so consumed with confusion and grief that they wouldn't even know where to start. How do you think you found that resilience within yourself?
Well, I know it was through prayer, because I prayed a lot. Mm-hmm. I know it was through fasting.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it was through journaling. And there's one more thing that I know I did, is when someone spoke negatively about me, my children, or the situation, I no longer communicated with them, because I was already having to deal with my emotions and my children. I refused to handle, internalize, or get into a conversation with someone who felt that what I was doing was wrong, that that situation was my fault, and that I was not worthy of help. So as soon as you said something negative, I would say with a smile, okay. and you never heard from me again. Because my opinion of myself is more important to me than your opinion of me.
Yes.
And if your opinion is more important than my own, then you will stop me from getting better because I will try to live up to your opinion. That's why I had to stop communicating with people who was not benefiting my life.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't add emotional wellness, if you didn't add an uplifting, encouraging word, you could not be in my life. Family, friends, foe, didn't matter. Title did not matter.
Mm-hmm.
I could not, because there was so much negative things being said about me and my children. My children did not hear any of that until they were in their 20s. So when go back and they hear all these things, they're like, Mom, why you didn't tell us? I say, because you wasn't able to take that hit.
I was.
I was able to take that emotional hit. You wasn't. So now you're hearing out and like, well, Ma, you should have told us. You know, we would have helped. No, you wouldn't have helped me.
No.
You would have been further damaged, and that would have been more work for me to do.
So
I was trying to minimize my work with you by keeping you sheltered from the madness that people were speaking. You know, they told me that if you would have stayed with him, he just would have killed you. If you would have stayed on the West Coast, then the people on the East Coast would still be alive. How dare you call you and your children victims when none of you were killed or hurt? And how dare you bring this drama into our quiet community?
Oh, my gosh, Mildred.
Yes, they did.
Oh, my gosh. I had no idea.
And I took it all. Why? Because they needed to be angry with somebody. They needed to be angry with John, but they couldn't get to John. So I was the scapegoat.
Sure.
I was the scapegoat. So I didn't, they said, whatever they said, I didn't debate. I just said, well, thank you for your comment. Thank you for expressing how you feel. But I had a shield up so that those comments would roll off me like water on a duck.
Mm-hmm.
I had my repellent on, and my repellent was the word of God. My repellent was that my spirit is going to take this. I'm taking this for my children because they are not going to hear this. They are not going to have to suffer because of what their dad did from what other people have to say. That's not going to happen. Not to these three. Not to them.
Wow. I'm just so overwhelmed by, I mean, I understand the whole concept that in my profession. I get that. But as a person, to hear that very difficult to hear that you would be blamed for something that had nothing to do with you. I wanted to ask you, so being a victim of domestic violence with that emotional abuse and emotional trauma you experienced, once again, I reflect on in the moment of that emotional abuse that you experienced when you were with your former husband, and then on the backside of that, or I guess after all the situation happened, and having all these people once again emotionally damage you or attempts to emotionally damage you, it seems as if that's a different person that came out of you.
It was, and I didn't know she was there.
What an amazing gift. What an amazing discovery for you.
Well, that's the saying that you don't know who you are until you are first faced with adversity. And that is when the essence of what you were born with comes out, because that is the time when it is needed. And so that happened to me. But another thing was that I refuse to be called a victim, even when I was going through it, because it's just the mentality of that word, you know? It's the mentality that people have when they call you a victim of domestic violence. You can be a victim of anything else. But to be a victim of domestic violence means that you agreed to be beaten. You agreed to stay with this person. You agreed to everything that you're going through. So why should we, the community, society, come to your rescue when you made a decision because you chose him? You decided to be with him. You can leave at any time, but you choose to stay. That's how society looks at a victim of domestic violence. Totally different from any victim of anything else. I could be a victim of a flesh-eating wound. People will come from all over the world to help me. They will set up GoFundMe pages. Doctors will offer their services for free. People will come and clean my home and even walk my dog. Let me tell you, I'm a victim of domestic violence. They will scatter, turn their backs, self-doubt, victim blame. Are you sure that's what he did? Maybe you did something to provoke him. This is a crime.
Wow.
This is a human rights crime. But because it has become so embedded in our society, it's just the wind blowing. Oh, she got hit? Oh, it should be okay. That's what she wanted. She signed up for it. She chose him. I didn't choose the man that hit me. This is not who he said he was when I met him. No abuser is going to come up the first day you meet him and say, hey, I'm abuser of domestic violence. I beat women. So you still want to be with me? If he did that, what do you think my answer would be? It would be no.
Of course.
But they don't do that. They disguise who they are. And at the appropriate time, once that abuser knows that this woman is emotionally attached, that's when the person comes out. Because now, in all this time, what have I been saying? James, I met this wonderful guy. He treats me so well. Oh, my God. He's everything I've been waiting for. And then he verbally assaults me or he hits me. You think I'm going to come back and tell you? I just told you he was the salt of the earth. Mm-hmm. You're going to look at me like, well, you're educated. I don't understand why you would put up with that. Like, really, James? Really?
It becomes that emotional blackmail. People get blackmailed in that because they, like you just said, they presented a certain way because it was true. And all of a sudden, there's a completely other side of that, and then that blackmail comes in.
But this is how you can tell who your friends are. Ready? Mm-hmm. I come to you and I tell you what I just said. My friend would say, what do you need me to do? How can I help you? If you're not my friend, you're going to say, well, why would you put up with that? You're educated. Mm-hmm. I didn't think you would be like that. I mean, wow, you didn't believe me is what you're saying. It's just that simple. You don't believe me. Being educated or whatever accolades you put to me has nothing to do with me coming to you as my friend for help. You told me all these years, if you need me, just let me know. I'm letting you know, and you take his side. See, that's how it sounds to a victim.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you don't come to my defense and you have comments like, why would you do that? You're blaming me, taking his side.
Yes.
It's just that simple.
With everything you're already going through, all the emotional struggle, and then to hear that from someone who's a friend causes, I'm assuming, would cause that person to second guess themselves. I think, well, maybe you're right. Maybe this, and it messes with one's mind, with one's emotional resilience, and then separates that person even more.
But here's the thing. You don't get a second chance after that, not to the victim. That was your moment to step up and be my friend. But you chose not to be. That's how so many people lose friends who were victims. When I go out and speak, they say, well, my friend, you know, she don't call me no more. The first thing I say, well, what did you say? And then they tell me, well, she came to me and I didn't believe. I say, that's why she don't call you. Well, how can I fix that? Send her an email. You got a phone number? Yeah. Text her. All you say is, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Don't say anything else. Just say, I'm sorry. She'll call you back. And they emailed me and say, Ms. Muhammad, you were right. She called me back because I told her I would. That's all she needed to hear. Because I'm sorry means I believe you. Please forgive me. I messed up. Give me the opportunity to make it up. That's what I'm sorry means. Just two words.
Yes. One of the big things that I've picked up on as I've read your website and all the many things that you've done is that emotional healing. As you speak to these people, how do you notice that your own healing continues to manifest itself? Because every time we talk about something, every time it solidifies in your mind and in your heart and in your spirit, you become stronger. How have you noticed, even within the past 5 years, 6 years, that your own story has also not only helped you, but helped other people as well?
Question, James. The first few times, I'm going to say 5 times I told my story. This was in 2006. So from 2006 to 2007, it was about my healing.
Mm-hmm.
It was about how I needed to heal from certain things. Because I remember speaking at a conference for district attorneys, and I'm sharing my story, and I get to the part about my children, and I start crying. So the people are looking at me like, oh, that's so sad. I'm saying to myself, where are these tears coming from? What's going on with me? But I'm still talking, telling my story, and I'm still crying. But these, as I'm talking, that's the thought in my mind. What is going on with you? Why are you crying in front of all these people? Please get a grip, girl. So I go back upstairs to my room, and I start journaling. Journaling saved my life. And as I'm journaling, I get to the point about my children, and what happened? I never dealt with the fact, neither did I want to, that John got to me. He got to me through our children. When he took them, I died. Literally, I was just existing. And when I got them back, it was like you took those pallets when someone have a heart attack and they say, clear, pump their body. That's how it felt when I first heard my children's voice, but I never the emotion attached to that. So once I dealt with that, then I was good. Now I can talk about them and, you know, I don't cry no more. You know, wow. So it's like, well, where is that? So every tear that falls has a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to find out why those tears are falling. So once you find out why that is, you will never cry for that emotion again. And that is what I was trying to do. So now I'm at a point where I'm done healing. I'm completely over this. I can talk about this. I can even go all the way and talk to you as if I'm in the casket. Come up out of that, leave it right there, and go and have a wonderful time with my children. Go and live my life. I have no emotional baggage, no residue, no nothing, because I took the time to identify every single emotion and deal with it, regardless of how long it took, because I needed to be well. I refused to walk around with bags with John's name on them. I could not do that, because to me, he's still winning. I need to take back my life. Means I needed to take back every emotion that's mine. These emotions have my name on it. These are mine. Nobody can take my emotions from me. So now it's about helping other people to get to that point, to understand who you are, that you were created to be a masterpiece. And being a masterpiece, it doesn't mean that you have to be completed. It means that as you go along the way, every step is a step you never took before. So in that step is a masterpiece.
That's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
Teaching other people how to get there. That's where it is for me now. How to get other people to get here. Because you can get here. You can, regardless of what the emotional issues are, because everybody had a shift in where they are now. Because we all grow up as children. We don't know what's evil, hate. We don't know that. We're just loving and happy and all of that. Something happened along the way where a shift took place. Once you can identify that shift, then you can start moving forward to getting to where you're completely done. It can be done. It can. But you got to believe and you got to know that that's where I want to be. I've had women come up to me and say, I want to be where you are. How do I get there? They recognize where I am.
Yes.
And they recognize where they are. And they know the work they need to do to get here. And they're willing to take that journey.
That's absolutely
I want to be
powerful.
An emotional healer. Somebody asked me, if you had a superpower, because Storm, you know, I love the X-Men. But, you know.
I do, too.
Storm is my girl.
Yeah.
I love Storm.
I love it.
Because she controls the elements. She
yes.
controls the thermostat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a thermostat. I control the elements where I go. So if I had a superpower, someone asked me, what would it be? I said, I would be an emotional healer. I would take on the pain of everybody to let them feel what it's like to be free.
Mm.
And then give them the tool to help them to stay there. So if anybody comes at them in the wrong way, or try to make them feel less than who they are, they would always be prepared to stay free.
Wow. You are such an inspiration. And I know that's not why you do what you do, but you are. You're such an amazing inspiration. I know that for my listeners, for myself, hearing your story, it's such a story of hope. You know, the comparison of obviously when you went through that, that was not hopeful. But to hear your story now, and that regardless of anyone's situation, to be able to find that stillness, find that healing, it's such a powerful, powerful tool that you've given my listeners today. So I want to thank you so much for being on my show today. If people want to find out more information about you, where would they find your information on the internet?
They will go to my website, MildredMuhammad.com, and they would find my books, a few videos. If you're looking for a speaker for conferences, not only with domestic violence, but women's conference or healing conferences, I will be honored to be your keynote speaker. You can contact me through my website.
Excellent. Well, I think anyone who would have you come speak at their convention would be truly blessed.
Yes, sir. I've heard people after the conference, they come up to me and they say, girl, you had everybody spellbound. Nobody moved. We wanted to go to the bathroom, but we felt if we left, we would miss something. How do you do that? I don't know. I've been able to include humor in my presentations because my story is so heavy. Humor helps the audience to digest it better. And
yes.
when they may have come there one way, but when they leave, they're laughing, they're inspired, they know what to look for in relationships, and they know what they will and will not take. And that
yes.
is the accomplishment for me.
Well, once again, thank you so much for being on the show. I truly appreciate you being a guest today.
Thank you.
I'd also like to thank you, the listener, for joining with me today. Please subscribe to this podcast, either through iTunes or through whichever podcast portal you joined with me today. Also, please visit my website, jamesmillerlifeology.com. You may enroll in the Lifeology Academy I created. They're self-directed courses for successful people just like you. You may also see all the Lifeology YouTube episodes I've created. Currently, there are over 125 episodes there for you to watch. And also on my website, you may find many other tools and techniques which will help you simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. Have an amazing week, and I'll talk to you very soon.